Oh, right, because then I get to go, haha, Jonah, they sided with me, and then Jonah owes me, like, 3 beers. Which I never cash in, because I don't drink.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 382, recorded on March 30th, 2015.
Welcome to the 382nd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 215th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and often includes gaming history segments.
And we do have a gaming flashback.
Woohoo! Game history!
So, I'll take this one.
Ooh.
Today's gaming flashback is Professor Pac-Man. Professor Pac-Man is a quiz arcade game that was produced by Bally Midway and its seventh title in the Pac-Man series of games, which was released in August of 1983. Like Ms. Pac-Man, Pac-Man Plus, Baby Pac-Man, and Junior Pac-Man, it was created without the authorization of Namco, who are the original creators of the Pac-Man series. It was also the last of only seven games from Bally Midway manufacturing run on their Midway Astrocade hardware. Designed to capitalize on the perceived quiz game niche, Professor Pac-Man presented simple visual puzzles and required the players, or pupils as they were called by the game, to solve each within a short time limit. Despite the game's usage of Namco's ever-popular Pac-Man character, Professor Pac-Man did not fare very well in the arcades due to the slow pace and its abandonment of the famous maze-based gameplay that made the previous titles so popular, except Pac and Pal, which never made it to the United States. The player is for one player or two. In a two-player game, the player who is the first to answer a question correctly receives its points and consists of answering multiple-choice questions before the time runs out. The timer is the original Pac-Man eating a row of pellets. The more pellets left when the player answers correctly, the higher the score is awarded. As the questions progress, Pac-Man eats the pellets more quickly. Bonus questions are awarded after the player answers between 2 and 6 questions correctly on his or her first try. The game ends when a player runs out of fruits, the game's equivalent of lives, which also serves as the difficulty indicator. Midway had also originally planned to release 3 different versions of this game: Family, which was going to be for younger players; Public, appropriate for general audiences; and Prizes, which would have been in casinos. There was also to be a new question upgrades every 3 months to keep player from memorizing the answers, but the name never caught on. Only 400 cabinets were made, all of the Public variety, and approximately 300 of these were returned to the manufacturer and converted into Pac-Land cabinets the following year. The program language was written in the Forth computer language. Do you remember Forth?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Forth. It's a computer language, like BASIC. Or COBOL.
No, I know BASIC. It must not have been very popular as a language. Not that I'm an expert, but I mean,
although
it's not been very popular.
Although most of the questions have nothing to do with Pac-Man, certain questions asking how many left-right turns to the fruit show that the original Pac-Man maze with a regular wall in place of the ghost regenerator and a line of pellets leading to the fruit in the center. And another question, which the first requires the player to study a city scene, where would you play Professor Pac-Man, while the others require the player to fill in the blank lower right square of a 16-square grid with 4 different fruits or Pac-Men facing in different directions in each row. On the questions of which first require the player to study the table settings, which was the correct sequence, or how many plates were this shape, the fruits would appear on the plates, and the Pac-Man would move from left to right as he ate them, if they were answered correctly. And for the questions, which require the player to study the light-up keys on a giant telephone of various colors, which number was dialed, the receiver would come off the telephone and Pac-Man would appear to speak into it. Again, only if it was answered correctly. Yeah, trivia games in arcades, I don't remember them being that popular.
It's kind of one of those niches that's only big enough to require like 1, maybe 2 trivia machines in the whole place.
I mean, usually bars have them because people get drunk and they just, you know, compete with each other.
Right. But, which now, with the advent of the internet, I mean, they've become less popular, I think.
Well, actually, you know, I know some bars which actually have this central, they all go to a central server, and bars across the United States will have these trivia questions pop up and people would answer them. You know, and it show who won the prize or whatever for answering the question first and that sort of stuff. You know, they'd be competing with other people across the United States.
Yeah, I that's very different, though.
Yeah.
that's like the bar having an event.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing.
So this week, I imagine that you're going to be angry a few times. Including this one article.
It seems to be your goal in life.
No, it's what's going on. And there's one article, which I'm going to say for last, which I didn't put down because it was too recent. So here's the first news item. Head teachers in the UK threaten to report parents who let their children play 18-rated games. And this comes to us from Eurogamer. A head teachers group has threatened to report parents who let their children play 18-rated games to the police and social services for neglect. The Nantwich Education Partnership, a group of 14 primary and 2 secondary schools in Cheshire, wrote to parents last month after finding some children had been playing games like Grand Theft Auto, Gears of War, and Call of Duty. Gears of War is several years old, even the most recent one. If your child is allowed to have inappropriate access to any game or associated product that's designated 18+, we are advised to contact the police and children's social care as this is deemed neglectful, the letter read. The Sunday Times spoke with Mary Hennessy Jones, the head teacher who drafted the letter. She said it was a bid to help parents keep their children as safe as possible. Quote, in this digital era, it is so easy for children to end up on the wrong place and parents to have parents find it helpful to have very clear guidelines, unquote. Margaret Morrissey of Parents Out Loud agreed that children should not play violent games, but thought that the threat from head teachers was a step too far. Quote, according to the... Quote, accepting the huge concerns about these violent games and their effect on children, I think schools are stepping outside their realm of what is probably acceptable, she said. It, quote, it'll be construed by many parents as a threat and is not helpful. If schools want to get the support of parents and gain their confidence, threatening them with social services will not help, unquote. Okay, Paul, you can let loose now.
Okay, I'm not particularly angered by this. I think the motive and the intention are good. I think that perhaps, you know, sending a letter home, calling the parent first, to let them know, hey, look, this is what we found out about your child. This is age inappropriate. In case you didn't know, there's a rating system. This, your child is below it. Like the game makers say that this is not for your child. So
yeah,
take a look at it. If it happens again, you know, they're bringing this material into the school where it is, does not belong.
Well, no. You see, they found out that they were playing it at home. And a 16-year-old playing Grand Theft Auto or Gears of War and having someone threaten social services to come and take your kid away because you as a parent deemed, you know what, it's all right for them to play it. That's my judgment, you know. And someone saying, well, we're going to take your kids away because you're neglectful.
It's a fine – you know what? I think that jumping to their first action being to call social services is – a little extreme, because I would know, you know, if my kid did something wrong and I didn't know about it, it's like, and especially when their point is, look, kids can get into this material and you might not know about it. I don't think it's about permissive. I don't think it's about looking at permissiveness of parents. It's like, look, we're parents and teachers. We need to work together to keep this content that we as adults say should not be in the hands of minors. You might not know they have access to it. And if you know that they have access to Call of Duty, your kid's 12. The game makers say he shouldn't be playing this. Did you know that? You did? Ooh, that's kind of a bad parenting call, and it's our job to let people know that. So reconsider. Oh, wait, it happened a second time? Okay, now we need to get involved. I think that is a better approach.
See,
but you know what? Not enough people blame the parents for being uninvolved.
Well, here's the thing about the 18 certificate. It is only advisory power. It is only you shouldn't let them. You know, it is not saying you can't let them. Right? So what happens is that you have these teachers telling parents, your kid is 15 years old. He can't play Gears of War. We're not going to let you. And if you do, we're going to have them take your kid away. You know what?
They shouldn't be bringing it into the classroom. How else is a teacher going to find out unless the kid says?
They're getting wind that these kids are playing it at home.
Right. No, but the point is, how are they getting wind of it? The kids are talking about it at school.
So
their point is that it's not just a vacuum.
But that's free time. I mean, what else do you talk about at recess? I mean, the kids are talking about having sex with their classmates. They're underage. Do you think
they shouldn't be having sex either? That's a completely different story that I'm not taking on. That's a little bit above my pay grade.
I'm just saying, you know, it's perfectly legal for them to play it. They just can't buy it themselves. That's what's illegal. You know, they have to have parents' permission. And
right.
If I were a parent, you know what I would do? I would call social services and complain about these people harassing them about their parenting style. I would just call social service myself and say, listen, these people are harassing me. Can you please tell them to stop it? That would be my solution. And you know what? If these head teachers don't like it, they can sit and spin.
It takes a village to raise a child, and not enough people hold bad parents accountable.
Yeah, but you know what?
For their terrible decisions, because it's not just about their right to parent however they want. They are poorly preparing their child for the world. Okay, so you may feel that you can go ahead and teach your child that the world was only created like 2,000 years ago, and that's your right as a parent. But you know what? My kid is not going to hire your dumbass kid.
That's you're talking about home. Well, here's the thing: what if they're homeschooled?
I'm just saying. Let's bring the logic out.
Well,
stretch it into other areas, because if something's logical, you should be able to apply it to other situations, and it will still hold up.
You know what social services would say? Can we please see some real neglect, please? Because if the kid was okayed by his parent to do this, then I don't see neglect. That's a decision, you know?
But the teachers are saying that it's not a healthy decision that parents should be allowed to make.
Well, you shouldn't also give your kids sweets, but they do anyway.
Right, and you shouldn't raise your child as a cultist. But if a teacher finds out that's what you're doing, they have every right to call social services.
No, Paul. You're expanding it to include other stuff. That's a straw man argument.
No, it's not.
It is. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
You just didn't like my opinion.
No, I just disagree with it, and it's flawed. Just do the second. just do the second item, please.
Star Citizen's Vanguard Concept Fighter costs a cool $250, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. The selection of really expensive Star Citizen spaceships grew by one over the weekend with the addition of the Angie's Vanguard, a $250 heavy hitter now being offered in a, quote, limited concept sale. What that means is that the design meets the game's requirements, but is not actually ready to fly just yet. Size, crew, and impressive array of forward-facing weaponry have all been nailed down, but other details have yet to be announced, and all specs are subject to change for the purposes of balancing. Quote, the Vanguard trades the maneuverability of the Hornet, Lightning, and Gladius for extended range, armor, and durability, end quote, the ship's description says. In combat, the Vanguard's roles are extensive. Long-range jump scout, extended duration patrol, reconnaissance ship, fighter bomber when equipped with torpedoes, tactical command, and control ship, bomber interceptor, and in the proper hands, even a fighter killer. The Vanguard is being offered in the Star Citizen Pledge Store until April 6th and includes lifetime insurance on the hull and two decorative items for hangars, plus an in-game miniature ship model. It will be available as a commercial ship purchase in the future, but in an event, but an even higher price and without the insurance of extra goodies. Cloud Immersum, and it said that it's selling the Vanguard now to, quote, help fund Star Citizen's development, which sounds both perfectly reasonable and entirely unnecessary, and even a little bit crazy. Star Citizen crowdfunding recently surpassed $77 million and shows no sign of slowing.
So, for those of you who don't understand, you can buy advanced ships with real-world money. So, you can buy this ship for $250 in addition to what you already crowdfunded. Which, you know, and there's a lot of people who are upset because this is starting to be like sort of pay to win, you know? But the problem is that people are paying for this stuff. So, why wouldn't they do this if you're going to pay for it? And the game hasn't even come out yet.
Yeah, it's a little rough because it's kind of... Well, the game hasn't even come out yet. People don't even know whether or not they're going to like this ship, whether or not these things are cool.
You know, they generally like it, but still.
It's just that, like, it sounds that any... Like, I could kind of agree with people being annoyed about it. But on the other hand, if other players will buy it,
then it kind of goes with what I've been saying for years, is that people vote with their wallets. If that's how they want to spend their discretionary money, then maybe you need to go play another game if you don't want to play in a world where that is a possibility. Not that I'm saying you should have to, but it's always an option. Like, nobody's making you play this game.
Yeah, but, you know, the tricky part is it was a Kickstarter project, right? So people have already paid for the game. So any developments that happen, they can't change their minds on. And I can understand if someone says, well, I don't have $250 to pay for this ship, so I'm going to be outclassed because someone can buy their way to winning, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, I can understand why people would be a little upset that they can't afford it, someone else can, and therefore it puts them in a disadvantage.
Yeah, but once again, you know, backing something on Kickstarter doesn't mean that you're purchasing an object. You know what I mean? Like, it's you know, these early access and all these other prizes, like, this is not a purchase, this is an investment. And you're not, like, yeah. It's not like you're going to buy a car and then suddenly, you know, the all-new fancy car 2015 turns out to have 9 wheels. Mm-hmm. Oh, hold on a second. Pause it.
Okay.
coming.
No, everything seems to be going down. Okay.
All right, thanks, sir. Okay.
Sorry, maintenance was at my door.
Ohio state attorneys tell Supreme Court that gay people are too powerful to have equal rights.
Excuse me? Oh, don't even. Girl, don't even.
just so bizarre. That's all. That line.
Girl, do not even.
Where were we? Oh, anyways. You know, Star Citizen just raised $77 million, you know, and I find it odd that they say that they have to, you know, it needs more funding to help fund development. But on the other hand, you know, we all know that video game costs can spiral out of control if you promise.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
I mean, like, the reports on Epic Mickey 2 were that the studio was burning through $1 million a month.
Yikes.
I mean, that's the rumor. I have no inside knowledge to substantiate that. But, I mean, that's the rumor. So it depends really on, you know, what all we're talking about as far as development. I mean, are we talking about, like, you know, the next 3 years of quarterly free downloadable content? I mean,
you know,
I'm not surprised that you can blow through a lot of money.
I'd have to check the Kickstarter site to see what the stretch goals were. I mean, not what people were, but what if it was going to include future DLC and that sort of stuff, you know, if you backed a certain level. The one game, the most expensive video game, the most I backed for any video game was Pillars of Eternity, which just came out. I backed it for $140, and I am not regretting that purchase at all. Partly because, okay, Chris Avalon is a friend, but also because it's really well made. And shockingly, for an Obsidian game, it's bug-free, or at least so far. And we know the history that Obsidian has had with bugs. And, you know, and it's getting really high scores. So, you know, if you ever wanted a point at a Kickstarter project that showed, hey, look, it works really great, Pillars of Eternity is that. Paradox Interactive, I don't know if you know that publisher, they picked up distribution as well for non-Kickstarter backers. So, you know, and it's, I would call it a double A game. You know, it's not quite the level of a triple A game, but it's extremely polished and more than, you know, just an indie game. That's what I would call it. So we didn't do what you've been playing, but I will say I've been playing Pillars of Eternity. And I'll probably have more to say about it, you know, next week.
Well, I'm glad we've actually mentioned what have you been playing before we get on to our final news item. Because I feel the need to share something with our loyal listeners. Because I have a platform and damn it, I'm going to use it.
Uh-oh.
I have been playing, as many of you know, Sims Free Play on iOS. I am very distressed at one of their business practices that I'm going to tell everybody about. I had a limited time quest where I had to collect all of 12 trophies.
No, wait, trophies from what?
Salsa dancing, I believe.
Oh, okay.
And if I did it within, you know, if I did it within the time limit, then I would get this extra prize.
Right.
The representation of the chances were fairly equal.
What do you mean the representation of the chances were fairly equal?
So from the way that the game looked and presented itself,
right.
You know, I was in the expert tier of salsa dancers. I only had one more trophy left to get. There were three trophies in this tier. I had two of them. I had a regular one and I had the rare one. Okay. So I was just going for the last fairly common one. It took me 70 tries.
Wait a minute. What are you doing? What are you doing? That takes 70 tries. Are you actually doing any actual control?
Yeah. You're salsa dancing for an hour and a half.
So what is it, like a quick time event or?
No, it's your salsa dancing for 70, you know, you're salsa dancing, and every time you finish salsa dancing, you're given an award at random.
Oh,
okay. So I had two master salsa dancers, which is what you needed to be in this tier. I had two other, you know, trophies in that tier.
Okay.
And it took me 70 tries. Now, that would have been, you know, at an hour and a half a try, that would have been, 105 hours just to try to get that. Now, that was not the amount of time given for the entire limited time quest. So like I said, it took me 70 tries, and I know this because I started with 100 paid hard currency, and I had to spend 70 of them to instant finish the salsa dancing to get another drawing. And I had to, each time, in order to get trophies that I already had. So this is, I find, a deceitful tactic, a manipulative tactic, and a shakedown. I am telling all of our listeners this. I am planning, since it just happened this morning, I am planning on writing to EA and telling them, look, I am extremely unhappy about this. You kind of gave me a shakedown, and I want my hard currency back, because this is not acceptable. You presented these odds as being not only equal, but favorable to the thing that I needed. So I already had the rare trophy. 70 is not what you purported to me as the chances. 1 in 70. Not acceptable. I want my hard currency back. And now I'm going to let everybody know what EA's response is. So stay tuned. Now that I've said my piece, I'm going to exhale. No, it's not acceptable.
I understand.
It is absolute no. No. People don't, you know, I said it earlier that people don't, you know, society doesn't hold bad parents accountable. Gamers do not hold bad gaming, gamers do not hold game companies responsible for bad design decisions. And that's exactly what this was. I don't mind spending a little bit of money, but this is not what you purported the chances to be. I wouldn't have mind spending 10, 20 hard currency. 70? Not acceptable. Not acceptable on something that you purported to be as being favorable to me in my odds of winning. Nope. Never mind my time, my energy, having to freaking sit there and watch them dance for 45 minutes straight. That was ridiculous. No. So I'm going to write to EA. We'll see what happens.
Moving on to the next item. PC version of Dead or Alive 5 Last Round launches on Steam without key features. And this comes to us from Eurogamer. The PC... The PC version of fighting game Dead or Alive 5 Last Round launched today on Steam without a number of key features. In its announcement, publisher Koei Tecmo pointed to the PC version's support for resolutions up to 4K as well as anti-aliasing compatibility. But the PC version does not include online multiplayer. This was expected to arrive in the form of a patch within 3 months following the game's release, Koei Tecmo said. Until then, the game is discounted 10%. It normally costs £27. It costs £27, down from £30, which I believe is sort of like $52 down from six. No, $48, say, down from $50. There's more. In the official product information page for the Steam version of the game, Koei Tecmo lists the quote-unquote effect as being equivalent to the PS3 version. Shadows, which you can toggle on or off, are equivalent to the PS4 version. For some reason, Danger Zone and Crimson Stages are not included. Can you say DLC? I knew you could. Meanwhile, the Steam version FAQ confirms there are no Steam achievements, and the game does not support the Steam Cloud. There is no keyboard control customization support either. PC gamers are saying it's pointing to a shoddy PC port, with the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 versions of themselves having experienced serious bugs when they launched. The game was originally released on the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. So,
See, now this is what we start talking about when we talk about a company, you know, a developer coming into money problems. Because I'm sure that if there were a little extra time or a little extra budget, they'd be hunting down these bugs. But it's like when things start slipping, stuff has to get cut. So it's like, what do you do? Do you not release on Steam at all?
I don't know.
Do
because,
you know,
the thing I would wonder is the priorities. I mean, was 4K resolution more important than online multiplayer? If you're gonna tackle one thing and not the other, why would you just go with 4K and anti-aliasing? I know that PC gamers love the fact that their rigs can do incredible stuff with graphics, but from personal experience, I know that fighting game aficionados actually love to tone down the games because they get very pixel specific. You know, they want speed. They don't care about pretty graphics. You know, they're pixel hunters. You know,
right? I mean, I have some game fighter friends in my life, and it's like, yeah, it's fantastic that the console can do all that, but the resources would rather be spent on speed than making every pixel look its best. I mean, if it takes a fraction of a second for the game to process that you wanted it to punch, well, I mean, you could lose the match in that time.
And the other thing is, you know, online multiplayer has become very important for fighting games too, because people like to, you know, fight each other. You know, there are very few people anymore who play same machine. I know the Wii is great for same machine, but I mean in general, Paul. You know, I guess some people could say, well, they'll have a lot of time to practice and get down the moves, you know. But I'm pretty sure a lot of these people have already played the console version anyway. So I just find it's...
Oh, no, I mean, the perils of playing online are even, you know, are even greater. You much rather have those resources going to your processing power rather than your graphics engine.
And it's also an odd thing to port it from the PS3 rather than the PS4 or 4 or the Xbox One even, or the Xbox 360. I mean, they're porting it from a last gen, which raises an eyebrow. I mean, maybe you know more about this. Maybe it was easier to port it from a PS3 version rather than...
It might have been more stable on the PS3, is my thought.
Yeah, but the problem is that the... I don't know. Well, actually, I think it was lead developed on the PS3. I'm not sure about that. I'd have to check. But if that's the case, then I can understand why.
Right. I mean, so that might just be the simple answer. It might have been cheaper, too. I mean, it sounds like they were having money problems.
But on the other hand, you know, they have 4K, but they don't. But they have graphic effects, you know, from a last gen. So it's just very, you know, worse. It's just bad PR for Koei Tecmo. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure that these gamers would have said, you know, we'll wait three more months before we actually buy it. And you know what? They're probably going to do that now. They're probably going to say, well, you know, you say it's going to be more feature complete in 3 months. See you then.
Yeah, anything's possible.
You know, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, this is what's it called? Anybody who pre-ordered this is a fool or something like that, I guess. But, you know, I mean, that's not what I said. I said that was in the article. I just didn't, you know, post it because there were a lot of comments from people about this. So, I mean, you know, there are very few things that I pre-order for, you know.
Right.
I mean, there's stuff that, you know immediately, well, I'm going to be buying this day one anyway, whatever the reviews are, so I might as well pre-order it, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, something else, you know, it's more like, oh, let me just see what people say first. I mean, how often do you pre-order, Paul?
Never.
Never? Ever?
I never, ever pre-order, even Zelda or Kingdom Hearts 3, which we all know I'm going to buy and pay retail for, and I'm going to run all over freaking Burbank looking for the, looking for the limited edition one with the gold Wii U tablet or whatever the hell they decide to do to me. Still not going to pre-order it.
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts is not, from what I understand, is not coming out until 2017, which is good, actually, because...
Make me murder all of you.
If it is... Well, here's the thing. If it is only Xbox One and PS4 and they're not releasing for the Nintendo console, which I find still hard to believe, it'll give you time, you know, before you actually get them. I mean, I'm pretty sure those consoles will be like, what, $300, $250 by then, you know?
It's like, if you're going to spend all that time making it, you're gonna phase yourself out of a generation.
Yeah. And you know what? That actually leads us to our next item. Go ahead, Paul. Zelda delay.
Okay, I'm sorry. I need to take a moment of silence. Okay. Zelda delay could ruin Nintendo's 2015. And this comes to us from Wired. Nintendo has simultaneously disappointed millions of gamers and surprised absolutely no one. Except me in both cases, by announcing that its Wii U Legend of Zelda game will not be released in 2015. Though it previously planned to give its troubled home console a boost with the new Zelda title this year, Nintendo now says it wants to explore broader, quote, possibilities for the title before it commits to a release date. It will not seek to release the game in 2015, neither will it show press the extent of its progress at E3 in June. In a video posted on Facebook, the Legend of Zelda producer Ishai and Newham said, quote, "We are no longer making a 2015 release our number one priority. Fans have largely responded with patience. That's okay," says first comment on Facebook post. "For Zelda, we can wait. But the delay is still significant for Nintendo's business. The legendary Japanese games brand may have seen its shares rise on the news that it would commit to at least 120 million
pounds.
To making mobile games, but sales of its Wii U home console remain shakily low.
Strikingly low.
Same thing. Compared to almost any other Nintendo console at this point in history, and shorter-term hopes for its financial performance remain low. Wii U owners will have to be sated with a few big games, including Star Fox, Splatoon, Xenoblade Chronicles 10, and Yoshi's Woolly World, another burst of Mario Kart DLC, and a slate of indie titles in and eShop releases.
Now, what was the other... I forgot the name of the previous Yoshi yarn. Was it Yoshi's Yarn? Oh, damn, I forgot.
I forgot.
Yeah, but it was yarn. It wasn't wool. So,
right.
you're not the patient sort, are you?
Here's my thought. Nintendo is not exactly hurting for money. I mean, we know that this is a company that tends to put aside 5 to 10 years worth of operating budget in liquid assets that they can readily access. They can have a few bad years. So that's point A. Point B, I'm not going to deny that the Wii U has been disappointing. But with the Smash Brothers and Amiibo figures, they're not hurting as badly as they were before. I mean, they're not really hurting for money. Like, they're kind of, let's face it, the Toys to Life category is insanely hot. I mean, Disney, Nintendo, Skylanders, these people are all printing freaking money. I mean, Lego's coming into the battle. Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
Don't forget the 3DS either. I mean, 3DS is coming to its own too.
I was just trying to say that, like, anybody in the Toys to Life category isn't hurting for money.
And also, the Wii U has also sold better now. You know, it isn't.
Absolutely.
You know, it's sold better, mainly because it's less expensive, but of course, that's always going
to
happen.
It's less expensive, and quite frankly, I think it needed a little bit of time to bolster its fairly unimpressive launch library of titles.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was about to say, now that it has more games, library here now.
Yeah, now that there's more games for it, more people are willing to buy it.
And also, of course, Smash Brothers. I mean, everybody wants... I don't like it,
Smash
but everybody
Brothers, exactly. It. Mario Kart. I mean, these are things that kind of need to be... So, lesson for Nintendo in that area, when you announce your next console, you kind of need to have release windows, at the very least, preferably release dates for Zelda, Smash Brothers, Mario Kart, Mario Party, Mario World. And even if they're a year apart, or 6 months apart, or whatever... You need to let your people know when the games they want are going to be coming to your console.
I remember when steam came out of your ears when Nintendo started talking about launch windows. You know,
yeah, that's absolutely ridiculous. I think a launch window is bullshit.
The launch window is 1A, okay. Folks. That's the launch window.
Exactly. I mean, if you're narrowing it down still you can say, you know, you can do a step down like, we're going to release this in 2015. We're going to release this for holiday of 2015. We're going to release this in December of 2015. We're going to release this on December 10th, 2015. That is how that goes. Mm. Not we're going to continue to release it sometime in maybe, I don't know, the first half of the 20th century. But don't be mad at us if we change our minds.
You know what?
Like, no, that is not news. That is you jerking our chain.
I'm going to make you a little prediction. Okay. I believe that Nintendo is going to announce their new console, the new, not handheld, but their actual console.
Absolutely.
At E3, and Zelda will be the launch title for it. And that's why.
Do you really think?
Yeah.
No.
Remember, Twilight Princess was the same thing. Remember, it was going to be released to the GameCube.
But that's what I'm thinking is that they'll do a dual platform release.
Yeah.
They're pushing it back.
Because they want it on both systems.
They can port it to both systems. Right.
Yeah.
I definitely think that would be a wise strategy for them.
So assuming if they do that, you'll probably buy the launch the launch system with and if
I am
they were
more
smart,
likely. Yeah, that's exactly what happened with the Wii. I did not get Twilight Princess on GameCube, even though I had it. I waited until I got a Wii because I knew as soon as I got a Wii, I would have Twilight Princess.
Even if it was
a couple of months old, I didn't get it at launch. Whatever, because I mean supply was awful for Wiis. You know, it took everybody 6 months to get one, but I knew that there would be a fantastic game waiting for me on that console.
Now, here's the other thing I think they should do. Have the new Wii console bundled with a Zelda game.
Ooh, even better.
I guarantee
gold
they could add $25 to the price, you know, and they could sell it like hotcakes. You know?
No, even better. If anybody feels that Nintendo is hurting for money, all you got to do, launch bundle of your new hardware with Zelda, paint the damn thing gold, and we will pay twice as much for it.
You know what I would also do? Actually, I would add an eShop code for one of the older Zeldas, just so that people can be aware that the eShop existed.
The original Zelda. That's it. That's all. Giving people the original Zelda. That game is amazing. Even 30 years later, they'll still buy it.
Because I'm willing to bet you that a lot of people who own the Wii U's almost never go to the eShop. You know?
Because why? Like, why would you?
What did you say? I didn't hear you.
Because why? Why would you? What is the big draw to me to go on the Nintendo eShop? You're not really doing a good job of, you know, spreading the information.
Well, that's what I say. You know,
about what's on there.
The code for the eShop, and they revamp the eShop for the next console, so it's a little bit more like Xbox Live or PSN, so that people can navigate it. And also, if they make a purchase, they don't have to repurchase it if something happens. That's one thing that Nintendo has to get clear. You know, people don't want to do one shot purchases, and if whatever happens to your console, they can't say, "Oh, you know, you have a new console. Well, buy the same thing over again."
Yeah, I mean, you can't really get mad at people, at consumers, for getting fed up with your exploitationary practices. Exploitative.
Yeah. So there is another item. Yeah, which is really recent. I'll read it.
Okay. So you're gonna surprise. You're gonna blindside me. It's not in the notes.
I know this is.
I'm already predicting. I'm gonna be pissed off about something.
Okay, this comes to us from Kotaku. New Jersey game store swatting takes an uglier turn. Gamers attending a monthly social gathering at the Digital Press Video Games in Clifton, New Jersey, Saturday evening, had no idea the sudden massive police presence outside the store was pointed their way until a caller posing as a fire department representative started giving them questionable instructions. According to local reports, the Passaic County Sheriff's Office received a call alerting them to a hostage situation at the Digital Press Video Games shortly after 7 p.m. on a Saturday evening. The caller described a situation in which men with shotguns were holding multiple people hostage, several of which were already wounded. In response to the call, the Passaic County Sheriff's Office dispatched the SWAT team and hostage negotiators while the New Jersey State Police sent reinforcements. The force surrounded the commercial shopping strip where Digital Press is located, closing off Route 46 in both directions. Digital web administrator and podcaster Frankie Vitarello, I got his name right.
Good for you.
Who provided Kotaku with the full first-hand report of the incident found below. We're not going to read the entire thing. It's a long thing. Tells that a large group of 40 that the large group of around 40 had gathered at the store for their monthly meeting of NAVA, which is the North Atlantic Video Game Aficionados, an event in which video games are discussed and traded amongst them. Vitarello described what was going on inside the store as authorities converged. Everything seemed normal until to everybody up until 8 p.m. When we noticed that Clifton police were converging on the streets outside the store. We speculated there must be some sort of armed conflict going on in one of the other businesses on the street, so we told the attendees to lock and stay as far away from the front entrance as possible and or to converge in the basement of the store, where several of us were already hanging out and chatting about game-related things. Listening to the police band radio via their phones for some clues to what was going on, all attendees could discern that there was some sort of quote-unquote ongoing incident in the area. About an hour after arriving, authorities slowly started to converge on the store. It was about this time that a call came through to the store. According to Vitarello and corroborated by a female employee, a man claiming to be a representative of the Clifton's fire department was on the other end. At one point during the time, the individual called the store claiming to be a representative and instructed an unsuspecting employee to close the store's front window blinds. They willingly complied with the first request, which wasn't too out of the ordinary, and really, what do we know about the protocol in these situations? Only when they attempt to instruct the employee to go outside and say something to the effect of, clear the area, somebody has a gun, did they realize something wasn't right. We're going to move on, blah, blah, blah. Police are still investigating. No arrests were made, no injuries reported, and soon NAVA meeting was back in full swing. Police are still investigating the source of the initial call, as well as the follow-up call to the store itself. Now, Paul, we know that swatting has become a real nuisance. And I'm not even saying nuisance. It's
okay, before you go on, just define for our listening audience who may not know what exactly do we mean by swatting.
Somebody calls the police and says there's something happening, you know, like a hostage situation or a suicide attempt. You know, as a matter of fact, this week, actually yesterday, someone called the suicide prevention hotline, and for whatever reason, the police came and eventually shot him. But in this case, you know, someone calls and, you know, makes police think that there's a serious situation going on that forces them to use the SWAT team.
Right. Okay.
And this is a very dangerous situation because the SWAT will assume that something wrong is going on, you know?
It's also illegal and a huge waste of resources.
Now, one incident happened a couple of weeks ago in which a guy was actually doing his Twitch broadcast and someone swatted his Twitch broadcast and his 10-year-old son opened the door. His 10-year-old brother opened the door to what's it called to have a gun stuck in his face. So, like I said, you know, my opinion is this, you know, if you're caught, mandatory 1-year sentence in a maximum security prison.
Oh, absolutely. This is not that something that you screw around with. Soft, I completely agree with you.
Soft, white, pasty males, and trust me, all these swatters are soft, white, pasty males, will find out very quickly, learn their lesson when they're in a maximum security, what's it called, jail.
I mean, this is abhorrent. This is not acceptable. You do not, I mean, that kid could have been shot.
Oh, multiple.
I mean, this is our law enforcement professionals are not, you know, a toy to be abused. This is ridiculous.
You know.
Oh, I'm so upset.
So, you know, hopefully whoever is caught will be tried like an adult.
Tried like an adult, and this should be this to me, I think, is
worse.
I mean, not to belittle anybody's experience, but I am reacting more strongly to this, unfortunately, than I am to most instances of sexual assault that I can think of off the top of my head.
Well,
I mean, especially in this situation where it sounds like somebody swatted a store. Like, you don't know how many freaking people are in that store.
Well, I'm pretty sure he knows how many people are there.
But that's my point. Like, you have no idea. Like, I could have, you know, some, God forbid, somebody does this to the Toys R Us in Times Square. I mean, there are hundreds of people in that store at any given moment. Like, not acceptable. You should, jail, mandatory 5 years. That's it. And it should show up on your background. Like, you apply for a job, yes, this is a felony. You do, like, you should be hunted by the FBI. That is not acceptable.
And I know people are going to attack me for this. I know what some sort of people are going to attack about me is. But usually these things have been done by Gamergate people. I mean, there's numerous stories of them harassing people in this manner. So I mean, I'm not going to comment on that. What?
I'm not going to comment on that just because, as I've mentioned before, everyone in the industry is kind of sick of talking about it. But whoever is behind something like this, definitely disturbed, definitely needs a long-term incarceration and probably psychological help for sociopathology.
Or they, you know, I'm willing to bet you, or could, because this happened with a 13-year-old as well. I mean, a 13-year-old swatted somebody.
I'm sorry, you're going to jail for
that. Well, here's the thing
years.
Is that they don't understand how serious it can be. It's sort of like the people.
And not for nothing, a minor? I mean, someone's going to have to look into their parents.
Remember, this well back, remember they banned laser pointers and made it a felony to shine them in helicopters, you know, at helicopters and planes.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, people don't understand that that's extremely dangerous, you know.
Right. And you know what? And that's, I mean, when it comes to technology, that's kind of a separate issue because it takes a lot much longer for a law to catch up than it does for technology to advance. It's kind of a separate issue. But this is ridiculous. My immediate thought is, where the hell were this kid's parents that he was 13 and able to do that? I would never.
Well, wasn't
I mean,
this?
I would call. I mean, I mean at, I at 13, mean. It might have been, you know, hey, is your refrigerator running? You know, this is not a prank. This is a felony.
Parents will find out very quickly if their 13-year-old kid did it. I mean, having a cell phone or a phone isn't exactly out of the ordinary for that. It's what you do with it that's the problem. You know, like I was going to do a story, but I decided against it about this developer who basically said he was going to quit Twitter because this one person was harassing harassing him and making sexual threats at his daughter and his wife. You know, the person is no longer on Twitter, but you know, you have this sort of thing going on. You know. Anyways, let's go to a brighter thing. Let's go to listener feedback. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, hold on a second. From Alphashard. Hey, Alphashard. Going for sex sells, huh? Not that anyone would know the difference either way.
Yeah, I'm not doing this nude and Paul's not wearing a hat. Sorry, folks.
Ooh, yeah, I'm not wearing a sombrero. Sorry. Companies spend money like fish. He's apparently quoting something we said. Doesn't sound like any company I've been at. I've had at two workplaces that have had several computers still on XP. They take a long time to upgrade anything. I've seen old plotters still be used from decades ago. I think companies tend to the if it ain't broke, don't fix it mantra.
Yeah, you know what? But the thing is that I'm talking about when they get new computers. You know, they get the latest heart. They get less.
Right. I think our comment might have been a little out of context, in at least in your understanding. When it's time to upgrade from something, that the amount of money that it takes to upgrade a large company, you know, like your Disney's, your Warner Brothers, when it's time to go off of XP or whatever, we're talking millions of dollars. That's kind of like, so maybe not like fish, because I don't know if fish spending money, but in massive amounts is definitely, I think, more our thought there. Getting back to Alphashard, Paul, if you have a spare Windows 7 computer, why don't you see if Grim Fandango works on it, or have you already tried? Oh, yeah. So just to catch up other readers, other listeners, rather, I bought a copy of Grim Fandango from, what was it, Steam?
Good Old Games.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I'm pissed at Good Old Games. Because I was very excited to buy the re-release of Grim Fandango. My main computer is still running on XP because it's the last operating system worth a damn.
When you're talking about, what's it called? Paul always says that they'll pull XP from him from his gold.
They will
gold
pull head. XP out of my cold, dead hands. And if you want to pull XP out of my, if you want me to give up my XP on my main computer, you have to give me something better. You don't just get to decide, oh, that's too old. No, you have to give me a better product. All right, moving on. So I tried it on my Windows XP computer. Didn't work. I tried it on my spare Windows 7 backup computer. It's not as robust as my main computer. The graphics card wouldn't support it. But yes, I did try Alphashard. Thank you for asking.
You know what? But the thing is that I had it working on XP, though. I had the problems with Windows 7 and 8 for the original game. Oh, maybe, you know what? It could be that...
This was the remastered edition, right, that we were discussing. Yeah, because I didn't want to, like... Because, did I ever tell everybody about the time that I was in video game graduate school. Well, yes, there is such a thing. I was in grad school, and I was I wanted to relive the original System Shock, so I dug out a copy, and I looked up online of, like, how do you make, you know, a game for, like, Windows 95 or whatever the heck it was, like, work on today's modern games. So I went through the whole game, right? I dropped, like, 10 or whatever hours on it, and then I get to the very final battle.
Don't tell me you didn't save.
Well, no. Oh, of course I saved. I'm not.
There you go.
I'm sorry. This isn't my first time picking up Pong.
I thought you were going to say this ain't my first time at the rodeo.
So I get to the final battle, right? And the actions of the final boss AI are tied into the processor speed. It's been 15 years. No. Processors are much faster.
It made it
unplayable. You would walk in. Done. So that's why I was, like, really excited, you know, that they had, because I didn't want to go through a situation like that again. So that's why I wanted, you know, that's why I wanted the remastered Grim Fandango. Like, let's make sure crap like that isn't going to happen, rather than me trying to, like, you know, jankily make a copy from the past work. So anyway, I tried that. And it really makes me feel better that you asked, Alpha Shard, because, I mean, it feels like you are listening and that you like us. At Windows 10, yeah, it feels like a real desperate attempt to get goodwill for the Windows OS in general. I think giving it away free for a year, they will feel will garner some slack. Though if you upgrade, I don't know if you can go back to Windows 7 or 8. No, clearly you won't be able to. In the same way that you can't roll back an iOS update, which is why I'm always one of the last people to update. At Kojima, I think Metal Gear is becoming one of those games that need to be retired now. Personal comments aside. At Tempest Debacle, looking at the screenshots, I feel like I have seen this game mechanic before in other games. Having never played these two, I can see it's a ship that spins around a pit of some kind, shooting at things in the center. I feel that it was very odd, a very old Atari game at some point.
Yeah, so it was Tempest.
However, he'll probably have to pay a settlement for this, and it does look like he's trying to remake a game that belongs to Atari now. There's making a game that uses certain mechanics, and there's just making what looks like a clone of what you previously did. If I made a game where you jump up and down on a large brick pyramid with a little orange dude named Q Bort, I'm sure Atari would see through that as well. Like I said before, it's a bit tricky because it's like, if it's your work, if you're the game designer, if it's your fresh first of all, if you're a game designer worth your salt, like, ideas are a dime a dozen, you wouldn't really need to go back to one. It's a little tricky, but it's also like, hey, I'm the guy that did this.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't. I'm doing it all again from scratch.
Maybe
you can't copyright a game mechanic. I mean, all these things that I said last time. Mm. At Xbox sale, if it's for sale, maybe a former console company could buy it and bring itself back, like Sega or Atari. Though I don't know if anyone would want to buy it. With the way they've been talking about integrating Xbox and Windows gaming, I don't think they would sell that then.
Well, here's the thing. Atari, it no longer exists. There's only a company that has the name. You know, Atari's been dead since the mid-90s. It's just been a nice name for companies like Infogrames to have, you know.
Somebody has the rights.
I'm just saying Atari's been dead for a long time, though. And
right,
Sega,
but I mean, yeah, I think Alpha Shard's point is like, hey, if whoever owns the Atari name wants to quickly jump into this race with some, you know, turnkey hardware, maybe they might consider it.
And
but
Sega,
that's,
in
I
no
think
way
that's
is,
all he's looking at.
And Sega's no way getting back into the hardware ever again. I mean, they sold their mascots, including Sonic, to Nintendo. They're done. You know, Apple. I don't know if Microsoft would want to sell to Apple, to be honest. You know, I think, you know, the only thing that would happen to the brand is not that it was sold. They just stop it. You know, they just end it. And I don't think that's happening anytime soon because they've already invested a lot into it. And they're now they now have a new strategy. You know, they're doing the integration between the Xbox and this is a major thing in which they're making it so that anything you make with Windows 10 will work on the Xbox One and vice versa. You know,
here's my thought. To me, it kind of feels like a game of Monopoly with, like, four or five of your friends. When you're coming in last and you kind of know that there's no way you're going to win.
Not coming in last.
And you're kind of just plotting around the board, going through the motions, and you're like, maybe I'm going to give up. Like, do you really care whose property you land on that finally takes you out of the game? No, not really. You kind of just want to be out of pain. So maybe if they're looking, you know, maybe if Microsoft is looking to sell the Xbox, you know, hardware license brand, whatever, you know, maybe they don't care if they sell it to Apple at this point. They're just like, here, you take it. We're going to go do other things. I'm just saying that brands and companies aren't as hostile to one another as the public sometimes thinks.
I'm sorry, I was distracted. I was thinking about Pokemon on iPhone right now because of that Nintendo thing.
At Nintendo's Next Gen, I'm intrigued what they will do. If nothing else, we'll have a new name to have fun with in the NX Gen.
You know, let me ask you a question.
Since there was no question of the week. Hey, Alpha Shard is still talking.
Oh, okay.
Since there was no question of the week, Alpha Shard wants to ask us something. What do you think, us, apparently, is the future of old games? Huh, I think I might need a definition of old games. To give more context to anyone who wants to read an old book, see an old movie, or listen to an old song can easily do so. Oh, okay. However, with games, that will become difficult, especially in cases of games that are online only, and once servers are gone, so too is the game. Oh, I mean, take a look
MMOs.
At my career. Take a look at my career. That's, I mean, just about everything I've ever made has been taken offline.
Oh, you're thinking of City of Heroes now, aren't you?
No, but I mean, yeah, well, I mean, for decision-making power out of my control... No, you're absolutely right, Apple Shard. It's a fantastic question. Later generations of people may have a hard time playing games that are no longer workable in current gen consoles or even computers. I wanted to know what your thoughts are on this.
You know, I realize that there's a lot of nostalgia filters. Like, I will play a game that I really loved a long time ago, and when I play it again, it's like, oh, my tastes have gotten more sophisticated now. But on the other hand, I cannot play Railroad Tycoon Deluxe on Windows 8, 7 for whatever reason. It just won't let me. And that makes me very sad because I was still playing it right up to, you know, that's a game that's timeless that I can't play right now on my main computer because it's, you know.
Yeah, or like that janky thing will happen, like with System Shock.
But the thing is that, you know, Sid Meier's, they're not going to remake it either. I mean, they came out with Sid Meier's Railroads, which I bought again for $2.50 from Steam because it was on sale. And it's sort of like, yeah, this is okay, but it's not what I want. You know,
Alpha Shard, it's a multifaceted conversation. While there are popular franchises that have old editions that will continue to be available in just about every iteration because
yeah, I'm looking at you,
Zelda.
Legend of Zelda.
Yeah,
I mean, the first gold Legend of Zelda, Paul has bought it over and over and over again.
I think I bought that game at least 7 times. because it's freaking amazing. I mean, it's one of the best designed games ever. Moving on. We're not going to lose all of our video game history because some of it, I mean, the more popular elements will still survive. There is, however, a movement to retain old hardware, retain old code, keep things around as much as possible. I mean, I know that there's an organization which fancies itself the Video Game Museum, which shows up at things like, you know, E3 and GDC. I mean, heck, I'll post a picture if nobody believes me. When I was at GDC, picked up an old copy of Atari and beat it, of ET on the Atari, and beat it twice because I know how to do that.
You see, here's the thing. It's easy with video game consoles because there are stores here in New York in which you can buy any console.
Absolutely.
Any console and the cartridges. It's harder for PC gaming because you have to get the right OS.
See,
you know?
Now, and even one step further, I worked on, in my early days of my career, a Gossip Girl Facebook game, which was, to my knowledge, the first and still only Facebook game that has ever had content specifically included to attract a homosexual gaming market. That to me is of historical significance. The show got canceled, so the game got taken offline. But, I mean, as a designer who was passionate about an IP, which was popular amongst this specific demographic, I intentionally put this content into the game. So the game made sure to track your gender, your sexual orientation preferences, and would respond based on your choices. You know, if you were a guy, it would say, hey, dude, this other dude is into you or whatever. And that's the kind of thing that you're right. We're losing. That's, you know, and it's not just, you know, think of the original Farmville. How long is it going to be before people aren't going to be able to play that? Or Treasure Island, which I'm sure, hey, you know what? I thought about this the other day. Let me see if Treasure Island, which was one of Zynga's early games. G-R-E-A-S-U-R-E. I used to be super into this game. I wonder if it's even still around.
Well, I mean, there's stuff like Diner Dash, you know, and the only version of Diner Dash you can get is the newest, latest version. You know, you can't play the original Diner Dash anymore.
Right, and the game Treasure Island is offline. I mean, I haven't thought about it in forever, but I mean, this is a huge game, and it was really well designed. And if somebody wants to study something like the importance of a core gameplay mechanic, I would say this is one of the great examples. But you're right, you can't preserve everything. Mm. So I think it might be incumbent on a company like Zynga to try to archive this stuff.
You know, that reminds me of 2 years ago when we had the story. I don't know if you were here, Paul. I know Jordan was here. And it was this teacher who brought his kids Ultima 4 to teach, you know, the teaching video game history and video game mechanics. And they absolutely could not play it because they had to use a keyboard. All the commands had a single letter command, like A was for tech, B, you know, and all that stuff. And they simply could not connect with it, you know, because it was so completely different than what we have now. You know, it'd be nice to be able to, you know, and Ultima 4 comes on a 784K file. You know, it's like you can email it to people.
And I think that's also like part of the fatigue of the free-to-play business model. I mean, you're buying something, you expect it to be around for a while, and then like you blink one day and your game is gone. Like, how much money did I spend on Treasure Island? I don't even remember.
Well, what was the game? The fairy game that you worked on?
I might want to go back and play it.
Remember the fairy game you worked on? That fairy MMO, the Disney fairy MMO?
Oh, Disney's Pixie Hollow.
Yeah, that no longer exists, does it?
That, you know, that's another one that no longer exists. But you know what? We tried our best to give our players, like, what was it, 3 months' notice? You know? And at that point, it was like, thank you for being with us and taking this journey with us for the last, you know, 8 or 10 years or however long that game was up. I'm like, you know what? Hey, free to everybody. Buy whatever you want. Come play. Have your last hurrah. Say your goodbyes. And that's, you know, that was the best that we could do with the decision that was handed to our team.
Did you get any feedback from the players themselves, the devoted ones?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, the players were crying. I mean, it was the boost in numbers.
Now, if this game...
I mean, girls who were now, you know, who had played in the early days and were now like 17 or 18, it's like, I can't... I never thought this would go away, even though I haven't been around for... It's like, did some young adults get some lessons in the ephemeralness of their entertainment? I think so.
Well, you know, you learn to enjoy. But, see, the issue is that, you know, I have every single issue, episode... I have every single season of Frasier, you know? That's one of my favorite shows of all time.
You know,
and I can watch it over and over again the way it was aired. You know, you can't do that with video games.
Well, you can't do that with a lot of video games, and that's real. And that's really distressing. But it's a complicated question. And you know, part of it is, you know, the larger successful game companies have to do their part, and I'm sure they will if they feel they can make a profit off of it. Nonprofit organizations are forming to help preserve our history. For-profit businesses are getting their hands on everything physical that they can because there's a market of antique collectors who will go and buy these things. Sadly, it's a societal question. We have reached a point in our history where we are the most concerned we have ever been of documenting everything, and we are creating so much content that someone, even if we produce no more, someone who is born today could spend the rest of their life, if they live to be 110, and not see all the content that we've already created and documented.
See, the problem is that you do have sites like Abandonware.com, you know, in which you can download these old, old, old games, you know, that no one cares about because the licenses expired or whatever. But the problem is that isn't going to guarantee that you're going to actually be able to play the game. See, that's the issue. You know, like I said, with Railroad Tycoon Deluxe, I can't play it. Even though I have all the files and all that stuff, my computer says, nope, not going to happen, you know, which is distressing to me because I want to be able to play it. I still play it. You know, there are old games that I still play. I mean, I'm sorry you're not able to play Grim Fandango, because Grim Fandango is a game that I've played once or two, like three times a year since it came out, because I just enjoy going into that story and playing that game and being, you know, enjoying the dialogue and the characters and all that stuff, you know? I mean, I'm pretty sure that, you know, you have the same feeling with Zelda, which first came out in 1985. So that means it is 30 years old, right? Legend of Zelda. But people still play the original Zelda as it was with all the 8-bit stuff, you know? They still play.
Right. I mean,
30 years later.
It's an important game that defined an entire genre. I mean, it's kind of like saying, you know, the Lord of the Rings might disappear. Well, no, it kind of defined its genre. So, like, but,
literally,
you know, imitators of Lord of the Rings, yeah, we're going to lose those to time. But, I mean, what was the, you know, tell me the name of every baker living in 12th century France. Like, there's, you know, there's a wash of the sea of time, things will get lost. And I definitely think that's a difficult lesson for our society to learn these days.
But, you know, it's a strange. We're in a period in which we can save everything, you know. I mean,
can we, though?
No, here's the thing, you know. Important people, you know, semi-important people or not so important, you know, footnotes, you know, in history, you know, like we will know, you know, someone from 1994 what they did and how they're involved in something. I mean, Google search. Just do Google search. I mean, you can do an ego search for Paul S. Nowak, and you can see stuff that might, maybe like 50 years, people would have forgotten, you know, because it wasn't important enough for newspapers, but it's online.
That might be true, but one day something is going to happen to our society. I don't know if it's going to be a meteor striking the Earth, or we're going to abandon our planet because it's too full of garbage. Like, someday something's going to happen.
Or we could have
all the computers are going to get turned off.
Well, that's just that, you know.
So we are, you know, so like our civilization is, I mean, if we look at history, civilizations fall. That's what happens to them. Yeah. Our civilization is going to fall at some point. And hey, my name is probably going to be lost. Your name is probably going to be lost. If anybody stumbles across this show, you know, in an you know, assuming they learn how to like make electricity, turn the servers back on, and like could find, you know, and the data hasn't deteriorated, like 2,000 years from whatever I'm talking about. I mean, you know what? Here's a lesson, everybody. Mortality sucks. Things die. It's kind of what happens. But you reach an age where you're okay with that. And I think that are the most vocal users of video games, the internet, you know, Facebook, whatever, kind of haven't learned that lesson yet because they're younger.
You know, I keep on thinking about my friends who have died who still have their Facebook pages. And sometimes I'll just post on that page.
Yeah, I mean, that's like mind-blowing. I'm sure that, you know, Facebook as a company never even considered what they would do to a page when a user dies. Like, when they were in their inception. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is not just a tiny little edge case. This is, we got to do something about this. We got to come up with a policy. I mean, it's not an easy question to answer. But it's definitely a brilliant one to have asked.
Well,
and you know what? I'm really glad that you did ask.
Okay, well, you know, we'll leave it as the question of the week for this week instead of the one I did post. So the question of the week is, what do you think is the future of old games? And just write to us on the site at gamingpodcast.net. You could also email us at fans@gamingpodcast.net or, you know, just subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments, you know. I haven't checked to see if there's any new comments on iTunes. I'll have to do that.
You should do that. I mean, you're the one who's in charge of like all the logistical stuff.
Watch this. I go and I find there's like a couple thousand iTunes comments I didn't know was there.
It's like, why aren't you answering?
Well, you don't answer iTunes comments.
Why aren't you talking about us on the show?
Oh, you know what? Okay, then fine. Anybody who has a clever iTunes comment, I will repeat it here on the show.
Okay? I expect that to be the bulk of our show next week. We might have to do a special edition.
By the way, I think the less hits wasn't because less people were listening, but actually it was just a different way that the software was doing it. I think it's not doing downloads, you know. I mean, in terms of now, it's just showing direct downloads. It's not showing podcast downloads, you know, when people automatically have their podcast, you know, uploaded. So I think it was just the number of people who clicked on the little button there to listen to the episode from the site. I think that is what the number was showing, and not the iTunes downloads. So it's just
you're talking about very technical things that I don't understand.
No, I just mean, well, here. Usually it shows the downloads for people who downloaded the podcast through iTunes, you know, automatically.
Oh, like automatically? Okay.
Yeah. And then you have people who just go to the site, click on the little play button, or download the file itself. I think it was only just showing people who were clicking the play button or downloading the file itself.
So you're saying it wasn't showing automatic?
Yeah, it wasn't showing that anymore, which is why it looked like it was less. Because, you know, very few people actually, you know, go to a site and, you know, they usually just subscribe to an iTunes. They subscribe to a podcast. They don't do it, you know, one by one by one by one by one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, the rare instance in history when I was a subscriber of a podcast.
I do it because I need to make sure that the podcast uploaded correctly.
Right.
Anyways, we'll see you next week. And this is not supposed to be a very long episode. We just inflated it, but I think I'm going to keep.
No, I don't think we inflated it. I think first of all, we started talking about something which I think is very important that our society start having discussions about, which is, you know, the loss of video games and, you know, key pieces of our art form.
But also, you know what? Give us your opinion on especially the first item, which me and Paul disagreed vehemently, because that's the best part. You know, when we disagree on something and we have to go, well, what do you think?
Oh, right. Because then I get to go, haha, Jonah, they sided with me. And then Jonah owes me like 3 beers. Which I never cash in because I don't drink. So, I mean, I've got a bar tab for you. Good for like, I'm sure like 40 or 50 drinks at this point.
What about Diet Cokes? You know, you always get a soda bar.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we need to discuss the conversion rate. Let's be honest. There's no way one beer is equal to one Diet Coke. I mean, we're talking like a 2-to-1 here, a 3-to-1. What are we talking about? I'm open to negotiations.
You don't have a Shirley Temple? That's not alcoholic.
Yeah, sugar.
Alcoholic. Yeah, sugar. But that's the best part. Have a Cosmo. Pretend you're on Sex and the City. No.
I don't know. It's a lot of sugar. I usually save that for weddings. Because it's like, really, I'm gonna have a piece of wedding cake. I might what as well drink liquid candy.
Okay, we will see you next week.
Bye, Bonds. What? It's good advice.